Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Up this morning, and I'm shaving, and Malia knocks on my bathroom door, and she peeks in her head, and she says, did you plug the hole yet, Daddy? I grew up in Hawaii, where the ocean is sacred, and in case anybody wonders, in any of your reporting, in case you're wondering, who's responsible, I take responsibility. It is my job to make sure that everything is done shut this down.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this.
It was astonishing. It was astonishing, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I've been in the radio business 16 years. I would say this is a pinnacle in the business because I've never seen a turnaround as I had seen today at the press conference about the oil spill. I saw the fifth estate become the fifth column become the fourth estate again. I was shocked. This man went in there thinking he still had them in the palm of his hand. After he just came back from a high out in the Getty Mansion where he raised $17,600 for a plate of bad food for none other than the bagel boxer. And everyone worshipped him and got in their hands and knees. And there's the brain. Obama's brain is still in Israel hiding in the Wailing Wall area somewhere. So he comes out today. He had to do the press conference. He's been hiding since last July. Didn't do a press conference since last July. But he knows that this issue, the Gulf oil spill, is his defining moment. I told you 2-3 weeks ago that this was his Katrina. I believe I was the first to say it. It doesn't matter who was. I believe I was. I may not have been, but I think I was. Okay. It was his Katrina. He was ignoring it. And when I saw the left-wing worshippers of Obama slowly but surely starting to call in with outrage and write in outrage. Even guys like Carville were shocked at the man's indifference to this, going to fundraisers, golfing, playing ball, basketball, anything but this. I said this could be his undoing. So he walks in there today, and this man never thought what happened today would happen to him. They have been kissing his behind from way before the election, and suddenly they knew that there credibility was on the line. And I got to take my hats off to the American media today, especially those who had the guts. I saw, by the way, that they were a little intimidated, as anybody would be. But when I saw the questions and I heard them today, and I heard men who would normally kowtow to him, Jake Tapper, Chuck Todd, Steve Tomlin, Chip Reed, no longer a chocolate chip cookie, I couldn't believe what I was watching. When a guy like Chip Reed, who had become a minion of Obama a long time ago, suddenly shows he's no longer a cookie, you know something has finally happened. They know that their own credibility was at stake. And believe me, they came up to the bar. I take my hats off to all of them. Now, I got to tell you this. I watched the spectacle today. Am I interesting you at all with this? Because I know that there's listener burnout. There's news burnout across America, incidentally. Listen, I have my finger on the pulse of America. I have the best stethoscope in the industry, and I'm telling you the heartbeat of America is turning away from the news because people can't take the bad news every day. It is so bad. It is so daily. It's almost as though the administration wants bad news. They almost want to shock you out of watching. You understand this? And I know that many of you can't take it anymore, so I'm going to do this anyway because I think it's the most important story of my career. I don't know of another one that's as important as today's show. Because this was the first press conference that Obama had given in nearly a year, and the astonishing nature of it is worthy of discussion. And that is why I've named today's show, From the Gulf to the Gettys, He Rides in Oily Tracks. Here is the president who had just come from a fundraiser at the home of the Getty family, which is a dynasty whose wealth was built entirely on oil. Now, this would require a biographer on the order of Henri Troyat, who wrote Tolstoy's biography, to understand what I just said. He comes from a fundraiser at a mansion in San Francisco with a family that's never worked a day in their life, that made their whole inheritance was built upon oil. And now he comes and makes believe suddenly he's not beholden to oil, that he's different than Bush. And then he begins the press conference. And the first statement, he tries to pass the buck, blaming BP for the spill, even though it was his administration, which was supposed to be overseeing the actions of BP. And then an amazing thing happened, as I said. The press, no longer the fifth column, starts hammering him with questions, real questions for the first time. And from the time Obama declared his candidacy through his nomination by the Democrats in through his inauguration up until this day, this very day, the media has asked Obama nothing but softball questions. They've spent years fawning over him, kissing his hands, shining his shoes, giving him a pass on the questions that matter the most to the American people. But today they attacked him like sharks. They asked him if he had reacted too slowly to the spill. They asked him how he could say everything possible is being done when Obama refused the help of foreign oil companies who offered to clean up the spill. They nailed him on the oil spill, asked him if it was his Katrina. They asked him why it's taking so long to stop. They asked him if it was fair to blame the Bush administration and if he, Obama, didn't really deserve the blame. And they didn't stop at the oil spill. Helen Thomas, who had not been awake in the last 200 years, was apparently taken out of the crypt. And he called upon her. He probably needed a break, and he knew she was a reliable left-wing radical who would give him a, you know, something easy to go with, some laugh line or whatever. Instead, out of the crypt, Helen Thomas says, like The Shining, she says, "When are you going to get out of Afghanistan? And don't give me any of your BS. Why are we continuing to kill and die there?" He was shocked. And then Major Garrett of Fox News, asked Obama if he offered Joe Sestak a job in exchange for dropping out of the Pennsylvania Senate race. We have all of these sound bites and more on the Savage Nation. I've never seen anything like this. Now, before you turn the station and go back to something inane and stupid, you got to understand something here. Although Obama tried to spin his way out of this press conference and was unsuccessful, the press has turned on him. I've never seen anything like it, as I said. He didn't do a very good job. This guy was dancing, he was dodging, but he wasn't winning. He couldn't use his normal charm, in other words. Remember where he just came from. He just comes from a fundraiser in San Francisco filled with lunatic left-wingers, the worshippers of the worst senator in American history, Barbara Boxer. So he figures the whole world is like that audience of dolts in San Francisco. You know, uncritical, stupid, slavish worshippers. No. So then he figures, all right, it'll be tough, but I can do it because I've gotten this far, I can get through this. But no, I was shocked. One after the other. Bam, bang, boom, bing, bong, the bing, ba bung. Now, I got to tell you this. Although Obama announced today that he's cutting off all oil drilling in the Gulf right now, you only got half the story. No, my friends. He's only cutting off American oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico for now. Do you know how many other countries are drilling in the Gulf of Mexico? Well, here's tonight's cable news, because I'm giving it to you right now in the Savage Nation. I'm going to name the foreign countries drilling in the Gulf of Mexico who are going to go happily to the Swiss banks with the amount of money they're going to make now that an American drilling company was put out of business by the Obama administration. No one is taking BP or the drillers off the hook. Don't get me wrong. But let me tell you something. There's something wrong with the picture that he bans drilling in the Gulf of Mexico with an American oil company who had this accident. And he certainly can't ban foreign drillers because he doesn't have power over the whole Gulf, right? Well, that's an excuse, isn't it? But as I told you before, Rahm Emanuel or David Axelrod was heard to have written or said, never let a crisis go unheeded. Always use a crisis to our advantage to aggrandize more power to the central government. And so now he's taking over the oil drilling industry. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't understand what this man is doing, if you don't understand the danger we are in from this adolescent president who is out of control, especially now that Obama's brain is at a bar mitzvah in Israel, I can't help you. But the minute I come back, I'm going to read the foreign country still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, which was conveniently left out of the speech. And then we're going to play the best questions and answers and discuss each of them here on the Savage Nation. So buckle your seatbelts, get ready for the ride of your life. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
If you're living on the coasts and you see this sludge coming at you, you're going to be continually upset. And from your perspective, the response is going to be continually inadequate until it actually stops. BP, under the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, is considered the responsible party, which basically means they've got to pay for everything that's done to both stop the leak and mitigate the damage.
So there's the lawyer, not the president. We're all waiting for the president. Instead, we got a lawyer and a professor and a radical activist. But he looked like an adolescent who was finally caught cheating. And the principals and the assistant principals were in a room. And after, you know, spinning them for a couple of years now, they finally say, you know, we got you in on a scholarship. We believed in you. And you're basically turning out to be a fraud. It's like you cheated on the exams to get into this job. They went at him, you know, tooth and nail here. So, again, I want to start by playing some of the questions. We have such little time. But the governmental incompetence and Obama's incompetence is Obama's Katrina. And the fact of the matter is, this will be the undoing of the Democrat Party, as sure as I'm sitting here. Unless the moronic Republicans do not exploit this. And so I know how the Republicans work, and they won't exploit it. And they're liable to lose anyway. So let's begin with the first question that was asked by NPR reporter Jennifer. No, that wouldn't be the most shocking one. I don't want to start there. I want to start with Jake Tapper, because after this question, I can guarantee you he won't be doing too much tapping at the White House door. Listen.
You say that everything that could be done is being done, but there are those in the region and those industry experts who say that's not true. Governor Jindal obviously had this proposal for a barrier. They say that if that had been approved when they first asked for it, they would have 10 miles up already. There are fishermen down there who want to work, who want to help, haven't been trained, haven't been told to go do so. There are industry experts who say that they're surprised the tankers haven't been sent out there to vacuum, as was done in 93 outside Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, there's the fact that there are 17 countries that have offered to help, and it's only been accepted from two countries, Norway and Mexico. How can you say that everything that can be done is being done with all these experts and all these officials saying that's not true?
If the question is, Jake, are we doing everything perfectly out there?
See? See the slippery answer? You see the slippery answer? Did you notice the answer, how skilled he is? How now you know how he got where he is, because people weren't paying attention. He didn't answer the question. He changed the question to his own liking. And he made it so that no one is perfect. I'm doing the best I can. Now, this is the slippery candidate, not the president that we need at a time like this, with two wars, with North Korea, with Iran, with China, with a currency crisis. And now this, the man is way out of his pay scale. Now, before we go on to take your calls on this, and I have a soundbite for every section of today's program with the best questions of the day with the answers and our discussion, I want to give you the list of the foreign nations still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Again, Obama said he stopped the drilling by BP. He's not giving out any more oil leases in Virginia, off the coast of Virginia as well, which, by the way, have nothing to do with this. Why is he not saying anything to these countries still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico? England, Russia, Cuba, China, Spain, Norway, India, Malaysia, Venezuela, Vietnam, and Brazil. I know that these nations, at least these nations, are still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, Obama may not have the jurisdictional powers to forbid the drilling in an area that he has no jurisdiction over, 3 miles offshore, whatever the number is today. He certainly has the capacity as president of the United States to do something to stop them from drilling if he really wanted to. He could curtail them from drilling for the next 30 days, saying, while we study the fragile ecosystem or whatever, but he didn't. He's only banning American companies from drilling, both in the Gulf and off the coast of Alaska and also off the coast of Virginia. There's one reason and one reason only, and that's the corruption involved with the green jobs industry. You notice that in the midst of all of this crisis, he suddenly started peddling the Nancy Pelosi green jobs fantasy again? Did you hear any of this? Do you understand what this is all about? Does that possibly, you want to get into the conspiracy side of it, which I'm not willing to do. I'm not going to go there. But if one wanted to construct a conspiracy, it would be awfully easy to do so, especially when you consider that he's going to stop the fossil fuels industry virtually overnight or hobble it. And he's going to spend trillions of dollars now in the green jobs area where his cronies are sitting like vultures waiting for the carrion. Albany, let's take the callers right now. Jack in Albany, New York, go ahead, please. Your comment's important. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was salivating waiting for you to go into this tonight. So don't second guess us. I heard you ask the question, does anybody want to hear this? And I'm saying yes, yes, in my car. So I figured I'd dial in.
All right, but before I let you go, what is it that I'm doing for you that no one's done yet today?
You're analyzing what was said at the press conference that Obama held today, while many of us were not home conveniently.
Right, that's very interesting. And it did occur after some of the shows were already on, some of the radio shows. So what I'm doing tonight is a very important service. I hear you. Okay, very interesting. 1-800-449-8255. Taylor in San Francisco, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Doctor. A couple things I picked up on after listening to your radio show, which is phenomenal, is the slow talking of the speech. Him changing every question, like you said, to his own question. And it's sort of something that I noticed in Al Gore's questioning. He would do the same thing to to reporters, ask the question back to them and have to think about it.
Well, that's an old trick that people learned a long time ago, and it works in universities where people are not that critical and they have no guts. But it doesn't work on the world stage where people are sitting there waiting for real answers from a real president in a real crisis. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. Make no mistake.
While it may be too late and too little, at least tomorrow he ought to show up and say, here's what we've directed BP to do. But remember, if he does so, it will have taken him 38 days to have done that.
Now, that's Karl Rove, who I generally pay no attention to. But I noticed he wrote an editorial that the Wall Street Journal ran today entitled Obama's Katrina. I used that phrase a few weeks ago, whether I was the first is irrelevant. It is Obama's Katrina. And Karl Rove happens to have written a very fine article about the oil spill and the failures of Obama, and we're going to go through each point because it's a very important thing for you to know. There's so much lying going on now that unless you know how to break it down, you're going to get trapped by your liberal friends who are going to say that Obama did everything he could. After all, he's not God. You're going to hear all of that stuff that you didn't hear when the levees broke in Hurricane Katrina, and you had a legion of racists saying that it was purposely done, that the levees were blown up by white people to kill black people, and that went out on the news. And schmuck people who make movies with grants from white idiots made movies saying it was racism, Katrina. But you don't hear any of that now. The fact of the matter is, this man is using this crisis to cancel all oil leases. But certainly, it's not stopping the foreign nations drilling in the Gulf of Mexico from England, Russia, Cuba, China, Spain, Norway, India, Malaysia, Venezuela, Vietnam, or Brazil. They're pumping oil. They're drilling. How come they didn't have a blowout? How come none of their rigs blew up? Anyone ask that question? Why this one, the only one that we know of so far, wouldn't be the only American rig in the Gulf, certainly, but it blew up and it's an American-owned one. And only Americans are banned from drilling offshore, right? So now, he says planned oil exploration in that region and off the Atlantic coast will be canceled and a 6-month moratorium be placed on it. And he immediately launches into the corrupt green economy that he's been pushing from before he was pushed into the White House by the green gonoffs. Okay? So now let's go to the next question of merit. The first was Jake Tapper, who, as I said, will not be doing too much tapping at the White House door after this. And I want you to listen to something. I'm an expert at listening. You know, there are handwriting experts. There are voice recognition experts. I am an expert at listening to people speak. And I heard Jake Tapper's trepidations, by the way, because this guy knew that not only was his credibility on the line, but in many ways, his accessibility was on the line. A very, very, very high tightrope to walk on. Now you're going to hear a couple of others on the Savage Nation, the next being this from this morning, when Chip Reed asks about the resignation of one of the officials who was corrupt. And how he asks it, you're going to see that Chip Reed is showing for the first time that he's no cookie. Roll.
First of all, Elizabeth Birnbaum resigned today. Did she resign? Was she fired? Was she forced out? And if so, why? And should other heads roll as we go on here? Secondly, with regard to the Minerals Management Service, Secretary Salazar yesterday basically blamed the Bush administration for the cozy relationship there, and you seemed to suggest that when you spoke in the Rose Garden a few weeks ago when you said for too long, a decade or more, most of those years, of course, the Bush administration, there's been a cozy relationship between the oil companies and the federal agency that permits them to drill. But you knew as soon as you came in, and Secretary Salazar did, about this cozy relationship, but you continued to give permits, some of them under questionable circumstances. Is it fair to blame the Bush administration? Don't you deserve some of that?
Well, let me just make...
Hold on. No, don't play his answer yet. Don't play Speedo's answer yet. Do me a favor. Speedo had the answer right. It almost sounded like the beginning to boom, boom. The Speedo, could you play Speedo for 1 second? I swear to God. While you're looking for Speedo, just play the opening of Obama making it sound like he's about to play Speedo. Just for a minute. I'm playing a little.
Let me just make the
all right,
point
hold on.
That I made
you heard
earlier.
That? Now find Speedo. The wrong. Oh, they're quick on the. All right, let's not have any more fun here. We're having too much fun. They even picked up the wrong song. It sounded like you're playing organ music from a bad funeral. Do you have it yet or don't you? Okay. So that's the opening to Speedo. That's all I want to hear. Now go back to Obama's beginning.
Well, let me just make...
Oh, my God. You see what I'm talking about, my ears? I have the best ears in radio. I told you that. All right. So let's get serious for a minute. You know that I like to goof around because there's only so much pressure you can take and I can take. So Chocolate Chip Reed shows he's no cookie and he asks really hard questions. And then Mr. Obama says the following.
Well, let me just make the point that I made earlier, which is Salazar came in and started cleaning house, but the culture had not fully changed in MMS. And I absolutely
let's stop right for a minute. Did you hear that again? Did you hear the slippery answer? Did you hear that? The first answer to the other one was we're not perfect. The next answer is he came in and he cleaned house, but he's not perfect. Did you catch that one? Now, Obama promised us perfection, by the way. Do you remember that? He was going to come in. He was going to do a line item veto. There'd be no business as usual. He was going to clean everything up. Meanwhile, he's at a fundraiser at the Getty's house the other night, an oil family, raising money for the most incompetent senator in American history. You call people carpetbaggers. It doesn't even apply to Barbara Boxer. I was laying in bed at 4:30 this morning. I said, what other phrase could you use other than a carpetbagger? The only other phrase I thought was a seltzer truck, a seltzer bottle. But it doesn't translate. You know where the word carpetbag came from, when a senator or a congressman or a politician went from one district to the other, in other words, applying their trade, which is older than that of prostitution, they were said to do so carrying their carpetbags, meaning their suitcases. So they would call someone who moved in from another area a carpetbagger. That's where it came from. So I affectionately call Barbara Boxer a seltzer bottle because, in my mind, she's really the senator from Brooklyn, not the senator from California. Now let's go on to the next story here. The next story is even worse. And I was holding this for another time. So he's on the ropes. He's taking one heavy question after the other. One after the other. Roll after roll. Bang, boom, bing, bum. And he's starting to look real. His eyes are shifting. He's looking down. He's like the kid who got caught in high school after getting in on a scholarship. They found that he forged the transcripts from junior high. And they caught him finally, and they didn't want to believe it. They finally say, but here's the evidence. You're incompetent. Not only did you not do anything you said you would do, sir, but you're incompetent. You can't do anything right. And, again, shifting, blaming. He did it. They did it. We're responsible. I'm not perfect. The ocean's sacred. Every trick in Oil Can Harry's book was used today. So he turns to his old faithful, Helen Thomas, who, as I said, was covering the White House during Lincoln's tenure. They went to the crypt and they rolled her out and they gave her some special fluids for this press conference in order to save Obama's skin. And he asks her a question, figuring she'd come up with one of her stupid, inane questions and everyone would laugh. There'd be comic relief. I would have done the same thing if I were him. And boom, here's what she does.
President, when are you going to get out of Afghanistan? Why are you continuing to kill and die there? What is the real excuse? And don't give us this Bushism. If we don't go there, they'll all come here.
Al-Qaeda has
Wait. Don't give us this Bushism. I actually thought she said, don't give me this bull something else. I didn't hear Bushism. It just shows you. I thought she said something else with BS in it. I didn't know that the BS she was referring to was B-U-S-H. I thought it was some other BS. No, but I heard her say, don't give me the BS. I said, help me God. Play it again. Listen to this.
President, when are you going to get out of Afghanistan? Why are you continuing to kill and die there? What is the real excuse? And don't give us this Bushism. If we don't go there, they'll all come here.
All right. Don't give the answer yet. So that actually was out of place, but nevertheless super important because no one's asked it yet. I've asked it for over 2 years. Why are we in Afghanistan? Now, don't confuse me with a neocon, by the way. Make no mistake about it. Michael Savage is not a neocon. Michael Savage is a real con. That means a real conservative. You can play with the words if you want. I just got your attention, didn't I? I am not a neocon. I never was a neocon. And I don't believe we should be in Afghanistan, incidentally. I see no reason for us to be there. I have no idea why we're there. No idea whatsoever. The only reason I can figure out makes no sense anyway, and I want to talk about it. So she asked the question I might have asked if I were there, but I wasn't there. So she did a job. In other words, that a certain portion of the American people would have asked, would have liked to have heard. So for the first time, we actually felt like we were living in a democracy again instead of in Venezuela. For the first time since the interloper took over the White House, I felt as though I had America back instead of living in Venezuela with Chavez making a mockery of a free press. It was a crowning. I tell you the truth, I feel invigorated again. I feel like I can go on. I feel as though there is hope for America because I've told you 1,000 times on this show that when the fourth estate becomes the fifth column, it's all over. It's the road to extinction. It's the road to the extinction of freedom. And I think they know it. Now, whether they were doing it for the betterment of the nation or to save their own credibility or for both reasons, I don't know. But it happened. The dam broke. And this guy can't get away with his lies the way he was getting away with them yesterday. Now, what's coming next, not on the show today because I got plenty of more coming. What's coming next is the questions about why the hell he's not going to Arlington National Cemetery over the weekend, why he is disrespecting the Gold Star families, and why he's leaving tonight for Chicago. It's unheard of. Nobody can understand this. It's a political mistake of the highest order. Now, we talked about it yesterday. We said that Obama's brain is at a bar mitzvah in Jerusalem, and therefore he's making some mistakes. But, you know, he's only a BlackBerry away, for God's sakes. That doesn't seem to be the answer. But I don't want to go into that question again. I want to stay focused today on the on Obama's Katrina and the fact that he has gone from the Gulf to the Gettys and the oily tracks run all the way around the world. Now, let's go back to Obama himself. And let us go to any of the clips, Beowulf, from 1 through 6 that you think is worthy of playing. Go ahead, please.
Look, this is a big mess. Part of the purpose of this press conference is to explain to the folks down in the Gulf that ultimately it is our folks down there who are responsible. If they're not satisfied with something that's happening, then they need to let us know, and we will immediately question BP and ask them, why isn't XYZ happening?
All right. Well, the answer is that the government was incompetent or did this on purpose, and I will prove it to you on the Savage Nation. People want to know why certain things were not done and in what order they were not done. Here, for example, in clip 13 is Bobby Jindal on the oil spill.
I'd like him to bring an emergency permit from the Corps of Engineers to allow us to dredge. I'd like him, I don't know how many thousands of feet of hard boom they can fit in Air Force One, but as many as they can. I'd like him to bring authorization for more skimmers, and I'd like him to bring the implementation where every local leader has got an accessible Coast Guard official with decision-making authority.
That's the governor of Louisiana, Jindal, who's been begging for weeks for a permit to build berms out in the Gulf to keep the oil from spilling into the sensitive marshlands
And the fact of the matter is the incompetence in the Obama administration, in the Corps of Engineers, are studying the ecological impact as to whether or not the schmuck should grant such a permit. Now, if this is not an example of an incompetent government that's out of control, I don't know what is. I really don't know how to explain to you that it can't get much worse than this. And I want to alliterate for you every single element of this problem so that you can make no mistakes about what is going on. Slimy things were going on way behind the scenes, very, very slimy things. And there is no answer to this question of why this was not done. When I come back, I'm going to read off a list and continue with the questions and answers right here on the Savage Nation. Savage. All right, we're talking about the incompetent administration that now has the biggest problem of its career in front of the American people. Now, there are always going to be one out of three who say that they're doing no wrong. These are the worshipers who will say no matter what they do, it's right. We expect that from both sides. We had that with Bush, that even when he was wrong, he was right. And we have it right now from New York City, apparently. David in New York, WOR calls. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm just calling to say I think the president is doing the best he can.
And well, see, that's the problem. He is doing the best he can. That's exactly my point.
I'm just saying we ought to support him.
But you hear what I just said? He's doing the best he can, but he's not up to the job, David.
I think he is. I think he...
Well, of course you would think he is, because you're one of the progressives who believes he can do no harm and that he walks on water, correct?
Progressives in Brooklyn.
That's right. So in other words, because you finally have a socialist in power, he can do no harm, right?
No socialist in power. I think he's a very capable man, and that kind of...
Then why did it take him 38 days to do anything?
He was explaining that there were limits to by statute to his time.
No, there aren't. He said he has absolute power. He said that at West Point the other day. Do you know that some of his most ardent cheerleaders, including James Carville, a lifetime liberal Democrat, were saying, they were screaming that it's been 38 days without an administration solution and it's not acceptable? How can you say that even they believe it's true? It's not true.
Mr. Savage, you're familiar with the chaos principle.
No, please don't change the argument. I'm not in one of your classrooms or in one of your old courtrooms, my friend. Why don't you just make your statement? I just made a statement that you didn't want to respond to. Even his most ardent supporters like James Carville are pissed off that it took him 38 days without a solution. So don't say it's me saying it. Everyone's saying it except you.
There's always, in a crisis like this, second guessers. After the fact, everyone says he should have done this, he should have done that.
Why did it take him 12 days to show up in the region?
I don't think his showing up mattered. He has subordinates, and he can...
Well, but you and the other Democrats criticized Bush for waiting 4 days after Katrina to go to New Orleans. Movies were written about incompetent, stupid Bush. What did you have to say about Bush that he didn't go to Katrina to New Orleans for 4 days? I'm sure you jumped all over him, correct? Or did you have an excuse that it was based on some kind of chaos?
No, Katrina was quite different, as I'm sure you know.
It was different. Why? Because white men blew up the levees?
No. Very funny. No.
Well, but that's what some of the black activists said. They even made movies about it. You know that, don't you?
No, I don't, but I can't help what the black activists say.
I'm just putting wires into your circuitry to see where you're coming from. All right, what about the containment strategy of barrier berms? You're familiar with it by now, as we all are, correct?
Yes, and he responded to that.
Well, I'm asking a question. We all know what a barrier berm is, right?
Actually, I did.
These are temporary sand islands that block the flow of oil into fragile wetlands and marshes, right? And yet berm construction requires approval from the Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Do you happen to know when Louisiana officials asked for permission to build these berms, on what date?
I'm sure it was much earlier.
May 11th. And do you know when they got the answer?
But his response was...
They asked on May 11th. Today is May 27th. When did they get an answer from the Obama administration as to whether they could build the berms?
The president responded by saying...
You're not answering me. When did they get an answer whether they could build the berms or not?
I don't know, but I'm going to answer you right now.
Well, the answer is they didn't get one yet. They only asked on May 11th. Today's May 27th. No answer yet. They're conducting a review, an environmental review, as the oil is killing the birds and the clams and the shrimp.
You don't put them just anywhere. Apparently, you have to...
What did you have to go to a review note for that answer? That took you a little while for a guy quick on the uptake.
No,
What do you mean you don't just put them anywhere? You're assuming that Louisiana officials who live in the area don't know where to put them? That only some pinhead from Washington will know where to build a berm? Some guy from Harvard who 4 years ago was pursuing civil rights cases is suddenly an expert on the bayou and an expert on building a berm? But the guy in Louisiana who grew up with sand in his gills doesn't know how to build one?
The issue was not how to build one, it was where to put them.
That's correct. Of course that's correct. But they didn't even give him an answer on that.
But I'll put it this way. I've had enough.
Well, let's put it to you this way. How about the dispersants that BP is using? Do you want to talk about that?
I don't know anything about them other than just what I heard on the radio.
All right. Well, let's talk about it without getting angry. The federal government was not even quick on the question of what dispersant to use. Those are chemicals that are used to break up the oil and speed up the evaporation from the surface of the water. On May 8th, Louisiana sent a letter to BP and the EPA begging BP, saying don't use dispersants below the surface of the water because subsurface use of dispersants will keep oil slicks from forming. And when it doesn't come to the surface to evaporate, the oil will linger below, get into underwater currents, and put at risk fisheries that supply a third of America's seafood. Do you know what happened? On May 13th, the EPA overruled the state of Louisiana and permitted BP to use dispersants 4,000 feet below the surface. And then a week later, after 55... I'll continue when I come back. David, thanks for listening.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Up this morning, and I'm shaving, and Malia knocks on my bathroom door, and she peeks in her head, and she says, did you plug the hole yet, Daddy? I grew up in Hawaii, where the ocean is sacred, and in case anybody wonders, in any of your reporting, in case you're wondering who's responsible, I take responsibility. It is my job to make sure that everything is done shut this down.
When he says to shut this down, he means the oil industry itself, so that Nancy Pelosi's cronies can bilk us for another $1 trillion for green products that won't work. So, maybe Don Ho could give a press conference next about, they could bring in a slack key band maybe tomorrow to the White House. While Obama's in Chicago, they could bring in a slack key band from Hawaii and they could have a ritual on the White House lawn with a luau to show how in tune they are with nature. They could bring in a witch doctor, perhaps, who can invoke the Louisiana rain god or something. Hey, look, if you expect me not to get giddy here, I mean, you're crazy. How much can a person take? This guy insults this country from day to day with his double talk, and I've been sitting here for 2 years straight telling you about it. Oh, no, you're wrong. Now already even the guys on the left who have been supporting him are attacking him because they realize he's full of it. But, okay, the man is perhaps the most skilled communicator, which is a euphemism for liar, in the world. That's how he got where he is. Let's not underestimate him. You say A, he answers B. You say B, he answers a question called C. You say A, he said, you know what I'm saying? That's the way it works. It's called rhetorical argument, and you never get a straight answer out of a man using slopisms. better known as sloppisms, but it depends upon which side of the Bronx you're from. So we're talking today about Obama from the Gulf to the Gettys, and he rides in oily tracks, part two. For once, the press today was doing its job. For once, they were serving the necessary purpose in a democracy, which is to hold leaders accountable for their misdeeds and inform the public about these misdeeds. For once, the press were the watchdogs instead of the lapdogs. And the question today is, why this sudden turnaround? Have they finally heard Michael Savage telling them over and over again that the Fourth Estate has become a fifth column in this nation? Did they finally hear me call them out again and again when I heard them asking softball questions of Obama over the last year and a half, or taking the side of terrorists? Did they finally realize that this time, if they didn't stand up and do their jobs, that even the most distracted American dunce would see that the press were nothing but lackeys and traitors? Well, whatever the reason, the press today asked the questions and Obama gave them nothing but evasion and excuses. Obama said the government didn't have the right technology. Obama blamed BP. Obama repeated the old line that his administration had gone into action on day one. But by the end of the press conference, it looked more like ground zero than day one. Obama looked like a child in school who's been chastened for cheating. His eyes were downcast. His expression was glum. It seems as if he didn't know how to react to a press corps that was asking serious questions. Obama looked like he might be about to resign. But then I realized only a man with honor would resign. But there's another question that needs to be asked here. Why didn't Obama approve building the sand berms that the governor of Louisiana begged for weeks ago? Berms that would have protected the shoreline from the oil. Obama claimed that they needed to look into the environmental impact of the berms. But that's insane. Look at what the environmental impact of the oil is. Could it be the reason that he didn't build the berms is because, because why the entire response has been so slow, is because the government has been trying to figure out how to disperse the contracts. That the federal government was busy trying to arrange contracts with their cronies to clean up the spill. In other words, had Louisiana stepped in, think of the hundreds of billions of dollars that BP is going to have to shell out. It's not going to go into the hands of the palms that are greased from New York to Saudi Arabia. It's not going to grease the palms at that mansion on the hill in San Francisco who paid $17,000 for gray scallops. And so maybe, just maybe, I'm just asking, is that an explanation for why the federal response has been so slow? Was Obama and his minions trying to figure out whose palms to grease? Because from the Gulf to the Gettys, Obama rides on oily tracks. But today at this press conference, Obama's oily ride skidded to a halt. And we're going to talk about Obama's Katrina today on the Savage Nation, again playing some of the sound bites and trying to get to the bottom of it. Many of you are trying to take the side of Obama, and I understand that because you're, like I used to call Bush bots on the show. If you're a new listener, you probably never heard me before. Some of you, you read the Playboy article and you say, well, listen to the guy. So maybe you're listening, maybe, you know, for the first time or the fourth time. But remember, even during the Bush administration, I was a doubting Thomas because I'm a skeptic and an independent conservative, by the way. I'm not trying to play it along the middle. I'm not going to play that. I'm an independent, but I'm a very conservative independent, to be very clear. I'm not mincing words, which is the new game in town. I'm an independent and super conservative. But I was calling people who would call in to support Bush 2-3 years ago, I was calling them Bush bots. So no one's yet come up with the phrase Obama bot, whatever. You can play cute all you want. But there are real problems here with real answers. So again, we'll try to go through some of them on the Savage Nation, one after the other, because you've got to understand what's going on here. There's going to be, I don't know how many hundreds of billions of dollars coming out of BP's coffers to clean this up. Let's put that down on the table right away. Wherever there's money, there are political deals. Let's start with that. I don't care who is in power. Wherever there's money, there's a political game to be played. Look at what went on the Bush with Katrina. You're telling me his contributors didn't supply the trailers that are still sitting there empty? They don't know what to do with them. There aren't enough snuff movies being made in the world to fill those trailers. They don't know what to do with them. They can't even give them to the rug merchants of Saudi Arabia to store the kidnapped blondes in. They don't know what to do with those RVs that are sitting there in the swamp. But the fact is, somebody provided those trailers. The RVs that no one lived in. What did they have to live in an RV for when they were welcome to Houston, which they ruined? They still haven't left Houston. They never had it so good. But let's not go into that right now. Let's stick to this. Yes, the Gulf spill is Obama's Katrina. There's no question about it. So let's look at some of the callers, some of the questions that were asked today, and then we're going to go into the details. And let us now look at this question. There was another good one. It wasn't Chip Reed. It wasn't Chuck. Here we go. Clip 20, Chuck Todd. Hello.
It seems that you've made the case on the technical issues, but on shore, mm-hmm. Admiral Allen admitted the other day in a White House briefing that they needed to be pushed harder. Mm-hmm. Senator Mary Landrieu this morning said it's not clear who's in charge, that the government should be in charge. Why not ask BP to simply step aside on the onshore stuff, make it an entirely government thing? Obviously, BP pays for it, but why not ask them to just completely step aside on that front? And then also, can you respond to all the Katrina comparisons that people are making about this with yourself?
I'll leave it to you
now,
guys.
Ho. Don't run the answers right away. So that's Chuck Todd. I don't know who he is. I don't know who he works for, but he asked a good question. And here's the answer from the president.
I'll leave it to you guys to make those comparisons and make judgments on it, because what I'm spending my time thinking about is how do we solve the problem.
Did you catch that again? Did you catch that slippery dance that he just did? Again, instead of answering the question, he says, I'm trying to solve the problem. But he won't answer the question. It's called a press conference. It's not a technical conference. We didn't ask him how to solve the problem. The press was asking him why he hasn't done anything yet. And he's answering, well, we're looking at how to do it. This is 38 days later. It's 38 days later, and the government has done nothing. The Louisiana, the government in Louisiana has been begging for the right to go out there and start building the sand berms, and the Environmental Protection Agency, so-called, and some of the other dunce agencies that have no valuation whatsoever, is saying, oh, no, we're still studying the issue while the oil is killing the seabirds, the clams, the mussels, and the shrimp. Incidentally, all of you liberals on the Upper East Side of New York who have taken up seafood now that your father has passed away, shellfish in particular, all of those of you who, since your parents have passed away, are now allowed to eat shellfish, the price of shellfish is probably going to triple over the next few months because a good portion of the seafood in the United States of America comes from the Gulf. So don't assume because you wear Manalos and you go to Monticello, you're going to not be touched by this. You're going to be touched by this. And I don't mean Monticello, New York, by the way. So why is it that it took Mr. Obama 12 days to show up in Louisiana at all? 12 days. Remember, Democrats criticized Bush because he waited 4 days after Katrina to go to New Orleans. How in the world can Obama argue he's been working from day one when he paid no attention at all in terms of even public relations, okay? Sacramento Lance, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. Savage, I was very pleased with the phone call that you had yesterday with Athena, a psychiatrist, and you went through various characteristics of Mr. Obama's personality. And now that he seems to have lost the imprimatur or the benefit of the press corps, and I'm sure is reeling from this setback, I really wonder what's going to happen as concerns the psychology of the overall situation.
Well, I can pretty much tell you what happens when a person with a very, very frail ego, who thinks he's in total and absolute control, which he said, by the way, tellingly and frighteningly the other day at West Point when he said, I have absolute power in some areas. Did you catch that one?
I did.
It was frightening for him to have to say that to the elite military corps at West Point, to say to them that I have absolute power in some areas without specifying what the hell he was talking about. My guess is he felt he was losing control at West Point because they didn't like him. He felt insecure because he is not a warrior, yet he's leading men into battle. And so the best way to control him, he felt, was to say, I have absolute power, meaning I have power over your lives. I can do what I want. So therefore, since we know what we're dealing with here, and since he realizes, again, he's out of control and that he's lost control of the press, one can only guess what might happen next. We know that there will be no press conferences. I will go out on a limb now. Who knows what's coming? My guess is he's not going to do another press conference until after the elections in November. That'll be my guess. Remember, he's gone since last July until now because he was doing such a miserable job and he was afraid they'd ask him about TARP, stimulus, banks, Wall Street, George Soros, Paulson. So he didn't do a press conference, right? So now he has to do it because they're screaming, Mr. President, you got to stop. You got to see them. There, even your supporters are screaming, you're not doing the right thing. Mr. President, Mr. Schmezden, if he doesn't, so Mr. Schmezden goes and does it, and all of a sudden, he doesn't have the control. So there's going to be no press conferences, my guess is, until after the election. It'll be all fundraising and all spin. That's only one aspect of it. But there's a couple other dangerous possibilities. And I don't have to elucidate them for you. I think you could fill in the blank on your own. 1-800-449-8255. I know this. I know that the dirtiest lawyers in America, every filthy, dirty rat lawyer in America who specializes in killing companies, vermin from San Francisco to Boston, who have never earned an honest dollar in their lives, and their daughters and their sons reflect the filth in their lives. I don't care what houses they live in. I don't care what parties they go to. The children never lie. And I can tell you right now, the vermin of the earth who have destroyed and decimated decent American corporations with valueless lawsuits, they're gassing up their jets to fly into Tulane University to park their filthy bodies in the dorms and to get ready to go out in little boats to see who they can destroy like the vultures that they are. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we know that Obama took 12 days to show up in the Louisiana area. Now, Bush was criticized for waiting 4 days after Katrina to go to New Orleans, right? And yet today Obama said he was on it from day one, which, of course, is a lie. And we have a soundbite. Who was it who said, no, you're lying? They almost said you're lying. There's one soundbite that came as close as I've ever seen to somebody saying, how can you say that when the... You remember that one, Beowulf? This is a good one. I don't know which one it was. One of them said to him, how can you say that when blank, 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 you know, was said. I don't know which one of the sound bites it was. But it's amazing to me. Was it, which one? Oh, well, we already played Chocolate Chip Reed, so I don't know that I want to do that one. I think the best one, here it is, clip 18. It's Jake Tapper. As I said, he won't be doing much tapping at the White House door. Let's hear it again.
You say that everything that could be done is being done. But there are those in the region and those industry experts who say that's not true. Governor Jindal obviously had this proposal for a barrier. They say that if that had been approved when they first asked for it, they would have 10 miles up already. There are fishermen down there who want to work, who want to help, haven't been trained, haven't been told to go do so. There are industry experts who say that they're surprised the tankers haven't been sent out there to vacuum, as was done in 93 outside Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, there's the fact that there are 17 countries that have offered to help, and it's only been accepted from two countries, Norway and Mexico. How can you say that everything that can be done is being done with all these experts and all these officials saying that's not true?
All right, so finally, as I said to you, shockingly, we get a press that's doing its job. I mean, I feel like I'm living in America again. I feel as though a cloud has lifted off my head. I felt like I was one of five people in America doing their job for the last 2 years. So help me God. It has been the toughest 2 years of my life between what Bush and Paulson did to us, and then he and his minions, what they've done to us. The madness of Queen Pelosi and her insanity with the big, the hammer running around, every man's worst nightmare, a crazy woman with big lipstick, with crazed eyes, with Botox and a big hammer. I mean, you talk about Freudian. I've never lived through anything like this. So for 2 years, I feel like I'm fighting this alone. And all of a sudden, we have a press again. And by the way, there are foreign countries still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. I understand Obama doesn't have the jurisdictional powers to stop them, but he certainly could say don't drill for 30 days. England, Russia, Cuba, China, Spain, Norway, India, Malaysia, Venezuela, Vietnam, and Brazil are drilling as we speak. Only the American companies have been stopped from drilling, and he's pushing green energy con jobs.
Savage.
Some in your government have said the federal government's boot is on the neck of BP. Are you comfortable with that imagery, sir? Is your boot on the neck of BP? And can you tell the American public, sir, what your White House did or did not offer Congressman Sestak to not enter the Democratic senatorial primary?
There will be an official response shortly on the Sestak issue. Nothing improper took place. You know, with respect to the metaphor that was used, I would say that, you know, we don't need to use language like that. What we need is actions that make sure that BP is being held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Beowulf, who was that asking the question? I don't remember. Major Garrett, Fox News, incredibly ballsy, as you would expect from the, you know, the great people at Fox. Many of them are amazing doing their job, and he's one of them. You know, it's a tightrope in there. I can't imagine doing it myself. But the fact is, to go in there, to maintain your credibility with your audience, number one, and be able to get back into the White House without being put on the, you know, the list of never allowed in again is amazing. I don't know how they get away with it, but hey, that's a free country, isn't it? But, you know, he's got to now, these guys who ask the tough questions, whether it's Jake Tapper, Chip Reed, or Major Garrett and some of the others, remember, they're going to be seeing each other again over the next years, hopefully. And this definitely changed things. They threw down the gauntlet, frankly. I don't feel as though I'm alone. I don't feel as though there's six people left in America who know what's going on and willing to say it. I feel that the media is empowered all of a sudden to be the great fourth estate that it once was. It seems that something happened here. And I sense it's because, you know, you can shade most things in the world. You know, you can have differences of opinion on virtually anything. Like there's an old statement that opinions are like, you know what, everyone has one. You've heard that one. Opinions are like X, everyone has one. Okay. But when it comes down to, like, should we be here? Are taxes too high? Did he do this? But when it comes down to a thing like this, when you see a natural disaster of this magnitude occurring in real time, in slow motion, it's like the thing from another planet arrived on the Earth and it's slowly moving towards shore to engulf people. And the federal government, like in a science fiction movie, is unable to do anything to stop it. They're studying it. They're getting the things together. He's at a fundraiser. The other one is in Colorado on a raft. They don't know what to do. And the American people say, wait a minute. Something's wrong with this picture. The oil's moving and there's no response. So even the most diehard bootlicker, the biggest Obama maniac, starts to say, wait a minute, this is our environment. Because there's one thing that they're all in agreement on. They're almost fanatic about their religion on the environment. Thank God. Unfortunately, makes them make some wrong conclusions when it comes to things such as the fake global warming scam. But nevertheless, everybody on the left agrees that the environment is sacred. It's become their new religion. Gaia is their religion. It's not the religion of Jesus Christ. It's not the religion of Abraham, Moses. It's the religion of Gaia. And fundamentally, they're nature worshippers. And now their sacred idols, the birds, the clams, the shrimp, every mollusk in the bay, and rightly so, is threatened. They're little icons, the icons of this religion of Gaia, this nature worship religion. All the icons of the religion are being decimated because the government did nothing. And so even they have to say something, and they're activated. Their switches are turned on. And that's why there was a press conference, because he was getting the feedback. He didn't give a rat's behind what they thought in Louisiana, a bunch of cracker fishermen, he figured, who voted for McCain anyway. What does he need him for? He knew it was not a state that would go for the socialist state again. Jindal, after all, is a Republican, for God's sakes. So they figure, write him off. Now, of course, if a nursing whale, let's say, had burped in San Francisco Bay and some of the mammalian milk from the whale had spilled ashore off the Cliff House, I can guarantee you there would have been hysteria in the White House, and they would have been out there in Air Force One, and they would have been firing, like ray beams at it to try to disperse the whale milk. But this was not in his backyard. These were guys from Deliverance Country, mixed in with some, you know, Cajuns who didn't even speak English. He figured toothless guys that he saw in a movie that scared him called Deliverance. So what does he have to go down there for? All of a sudden, his own minions are saying, but wait a minute, nature's sacred. The icons of my religion are being decimated by the oil. You have to do something. Get up there, say something. So he comes back from the Getty Mansion. By the way, again, I have to reiterate, This is something for a future biographer. It's astounding. The Getty fortune is built on the oil fortune, the Getty Oil Company. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. Perfectly fine. But I think there's an irony here that only a biographer on the order of Henri Troyat, who's long gone, could really do. We don't have biographers left in America that I know of. What we have, well, let's not go into what I, so there's no longer any great biographers, but a great biographer like Henri Troyat, who wrote Tolstoy's biography, could understand what I just said. The irony of going to a fundraiser, to conduct a fundraiser for the carpetbagger with a seltzer bagger, Barbara Boxer at the Getty Mansion, an oil fortune, and then 2 days later coming and standing up here and facing the world with the double talk and not getting away with it because the press is suddenly doing their job because it is his Katrina. Now, there's another fine point to this whole discussion that you lawyers listening would appreciate. And this is very important for you to listen to. We are asking, is this Obama's Katrina? Karl Rove says it could be even worse. Now, this is the first time I've quoted Karl Rove in my entire radio career. But he's right. And he says that the federal response to Hurricane Katrina was governed by the 1988 Stafford Act, which says that in natural disasters, onshore states are in charge, not Washington. The federal obligation in those circumstances is to support state and local assistance efforts by providing whatever resources a governor requests and then writing big checks for the cleanup. And so Bush had to deal with the Louisiana governor and a New Orleans mayor who, in fact, by federal law, were in charge of the cleanup. You understand that? That was the Stafford Act, which says that in natural disasters, onshore states are in charge. But here's the rub, all of you Obama maniacs. BP's well was drilled in federal waters, not in state waters. And so Washington, not Louisiana, is in charge. This is clearly the Obama administration's problem. Obama says his administration has been prepared for the worst from the start. But his failure to lead in cleaning up the spill and the foot dragging and the incompetence will no doubt lead voters to say that the federal government failed us once again. And so, yes, the Gulf spill is Obama's Katrina. In fact, many think it will be even worse than Katrina. I said about a week ago when I saw the magnitude of this, and never forget that I am perhaps the only active conservationist in the media. Yes, I'll say that again. I don't care whether you accept it or not. My doctorate is in a field related to this area. I collected plants for many, many years in the you want to call rainforest. You say, well, what does it have to do with this? Well, if you don't understand what tropical plants have to do with understanding something about the oceans and the bays, I can't help you. If you don't even understand what the word ecology means, which is the interconnectedness of all of nature, I can't help you. But if you do understand what I just said, I will tell you that I own this issue. And I am telling you that as one of the few people in the media who truly understand the physical chemistry involved in some of this, the chemistry involved in some of this, the geology involved in some of this, the botany involved in some of this, I am telling you that 2 weeks ago I said to you this is going to be bigger than the Valdez. I also said this is Obama's Katrina. And I am telling you that once the radical left was activated because the icons of their nature-worshipping religion were suddenly being decimated by the inaction of the administration, I am telling you that this could bring down the Obama administration. And strangely enough, while all of this is going on, while the CSTAC scandal continues to grow, Rahm Emanuel is hiding behind the Western Wall, sticking his prayers between the limestone rocks. Now, I want to turn to Obama's brain, Rahm Emanuel, for a minute, the fellow with the towel in the gym, in the White House, in the House gym, if you remember him. Rahm Emanuel is not available. Now, you understand something is wrong with this picture, don't you? The chief of staff is not here during the biggest catastrophe of his boss's career. He's only a plane ride away. He's probably gone there on Air Force Two. He didn't fly there by El Al. I can guarantee you he didn't go there by United or Lufthansa. He probably went on AF2 or AF3. You understand this? He could be back in 12 hours, but he's not here. Where is he? Where is Rahm Emanuel, and why is he not here during Obama's greatest need? Well, if you put two and two together, what you come up with, he's hiding. He's hiding not from this disaster, but from the impeachable disaster of the Joe Sestak situation. Now, I want to focus for 2 seconds on the relationships between why Rahm Emanuel may in fact be out of town or out to lunch, if you want to put it to you that way, and why he's not here and what he's doing in Israel. As I speak with you, I hope they didn't take it off the website. I don't see it. It may or may not be there. Art, put it back up if you took it down, because a very important story. I sent him so many stories today from 4:30 in the morning that my webmaster, Art Moore, may have just had to knock it off the off the site. Here it is. I got it. Two Israelis arrested for heckling Rahm Emanuel. If you think we've lost freedom of speech here, you don't know what a police state is until you go to Israel. You'll think that you're back in Eastern Europe. Two Israelis arrested for heckling Obama aide. Listen to this article. Two right-wing Israeli activists, meaning two real Jews. See, that's a I'm translating for you. Two right-wing Israeli activists were arrested on Thursday after they decided to heckle White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel as he toured Jerusalem's Old City. Itamar Ben-Gvir and Baruch Marzel were arrested because they insulted the Chief of Staff of the White House and the Old City police spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld said. So apparently Mickey Rosenfeld, whose ancestors fled Hitler, doesn't realize that he's now wearing a Gestapo uniform. Then he says one of the right-wingers, meaning one of the real Jews, could be heard yelling, "Shame on you! You hate Israel and traitor," so they arrested him. Now, what was Rahm Emanuel doing? He was visiting Roman ruins in the Old City's Cardo area, right? So what does that have to do with anything? What it has to do with is this. Emanuel has done everything he could to cut the heart out of Israel. You can't build in East Jerusalem. You can't build new settlements in the West Bank, so-called. You can't do anything to survive as a nation. Even though I served a stint in the Israeli army, and even though my father was born in Jerusalem, and even though my father was one of the revolutionaries who helped found Israel, since I am now a Machiavellian American operative, I don't care about Israel. See, now he has the audacity to want to go back to Israel for his son's bar mitzvah. That's not so unusual unto itself. But here's the rub. Where does he choose to hold the bar mitzvah? He chooses to hold the bar mitzvah on an archaeological sensitive site on or near the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, which is forbidden by Israeli law. And he gets the Israeli mandarins to accede to him. Naturally, they have to because it's a matzah republic, as you well understand. And so, you know, no matzah, no laundry. So they deliver the goods. They let him hold the bar mitzvah in an area that's contested, in an area that's archaeologically sensitive, an area that has religious connotations. And so the, quote, right-wingers, meaning the real Jews, go out and protest. And they say, no, this is wrong. You can't do this. How dare you hold a bar mitzvah on the Western Wall? It's the most sacred site in Israel. It'd be like a Palestinian American who sells out his people in America, becomes a politician, and then has the nerve to go back to it, they would call it Palestine, and wait, and hold some religious confirmation in the Muslim faith on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, or next to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, or put a tent up next to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And by the way, I've been at both sites, so I know exactly the area I'm doing. And tell me what would happen if that happened. It's unheard of. That's exactly what Rahm Emanuel did. So naturally, the religious Jews object to it, and they go out and they start screaming things at him, such as traitor, this and that. And the descendants of those who fled the Holocaust, who are now trying to create the police state that their parents fled from, arrest the protesters, all because Rahm Emanuel wanted to have a nice bar mitzvah in Israel. I'll be right back. Savage.
The sight of the president going out to California yesterday for a fundraiser was not a good image to be seen at this moment. They see that they need to be more activist, not just in his trip to the Gulf, but also in this press conference. The fact that he feels compelled to start answering questions on this tells you that they're starting to recognize the political peril that they're in if they don't seem like they're trying to get their arms around this in a more active way.
Let's give the warmest California welcome to the president of the United States, Barack Obama.
So that was author of New York Magazine political columnist John Heilman speaking today on a television show, and he was right. Obama would not have had this press conference if he didn't know that he was in political peril and that he's in peril the entire Democrat Party. They are in bigger trouble than you'll ever know. Now, people are saying they'll lose 4 to 12 seats, and it's anyone's guess because anything can happen between now and November. No one knows. We go to war, you know, everything's up in the air, and I wouldn't put anything past these people. Let's go to the callers and see what you think. Michigan, Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
Abandoned Britain, you wrote that no male authority figure has ever said to Obama, stop, you can't do that. And after listening to, like, last night, the nice lady was talking about narcissism and oppositional defiant, I'm beginning to wonder if somehow, somewhere in his mind, front or back, if he isn't looking for a way out of this, he might not want to run as the candidate.
Well, I had that feeling today, to be frank with you, Dan. There were several moments during the press conference where I, as an independent amateur observer of human nature, felt that he wished to God he could just walk away from this whole mess and be done with it. That it's way beyond anything he ever wanted, and he really would like to get out of the kitchen. It was too much. I saw that. Now, it wouldn't be unheard of, but I don't know of an American president who has resigned. There may have been one. But I raised that issue with a very smart woman today, and I said, I actually thought that the president at some point felt as though he wanted to resign, and he might do it from the stress that he's under, that he can't take this anymore. And then turn the whole thing over to old sloppy Joe Biden, who at least is an old, you know, Democrat flack warhorse, will do what he's told by smarter men than he. And she said to me, it would take a man of honor to resign. Don't expect it. See, women are always smarter than men, especially if you know which women to talk with. So anyway, here we are. I don't know whether he's certainly what he's thinking. Who can know what the other man's thinking? But this is a big problem. Because, as I say, the icon of the illiberal left is the environment. That's their religion. And, you know, the clams and the oysters and the shells, all the mollusks and the seabirds naturally becomes issues, icons, iconic for them. And they're dying. And they're going to be dying for a long time to come. And they have to say the federal government didn't do enough or did it too slowly or failed them. In other words, they failed them with their religion. And it's Obama who was their messiah, who was supposed to lead them across the Red Sea. You want me to get into metaphors? It's not the right place for it. You know, he should have been able to part the Red Sea. These guys believed in him so much that they thought this guy could part the Red Sea. Do you understand that? He promised them so much, and they're so gullible. They are so gullible, the radical left in this country, and there must be an awful lot of them, that they thought he could part the Red Sea and lead them to the promised land. Well, not only could he not part the Red Sea, the man couldn't even stop the Black Sea from oozing. And so now they're finally waking up and they're asking the questions and they're writing the columns. And I believe that this could be the downfall not only of Obama but the entire left wing of the Democrat Party, if not the Democrat Party itself. They may not recover from this for 20 years, but it would take a viable, vigorous, reactive and proactive Republican Party to capitalize on this, and unfortunately we don't have that. We do not have a party that's willing to jump in there and criticize in a productive way and show the mistakes that Obama has been making and then do this right through the elections. As sure as I'm sitting here, their advisors, all of whom work for Democrats as well as Republicans, they did it to McCain, they're going to do it to the entire Republican Party. There's not an advisory team in the United States of America that is not compromised and owned by both parties. So I don't expect to see ads running, you know, in September and October saying, remember the Gulf or remember all of these other insults. They're going to hammer only health care. They're not going to even catch up with what he's done now. And believe me, mark my words, this is not the last insult and shock to the system you're going to get from him. Trust me on that.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
When it comes to the response since the crisis happened, I am very confident that the federal government has acted consistently with a sense of urgency. When it comes to prior to this accident happening, I think there was a lack of anticipating what the worst case scenarios would be.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Today's big news is the Gulf oil spill and Obama's attempts to spin it, that he's done a great job. And the only people who believe that would be CNN and certain denizens of the University of California at Berkeley. No one on earth. The press attacked him like jackals. Finally, they had enough of him. They know he's delusional. They know that they can't take any more of his bull crap. And they went after him finally. It was amazing. This was the first press conference that Obama has given in nearly a year. First of all, Obama had just come from a fundraiser with the Getty family. Don't forget that at the Getty Mansion, they raised $1.5 million for none other than the bagel, Barber Boxer. But the Getty's dynasty is built on wealth, built entirely on oil. Hello? That's why today's show is Obama from the Gulf to the Gettys. He rides in oily tracks. And then he began the press conference with a statement in which he tried to pass the buck, blaming BP for the spill, even though it was his administration that was supposed to be overseeing the actions of BP, but they weren't there. But then an amazing thing happened. The press started asking real questions for the first time since Obama has arrived on the scene. From the time Obama declared his candidacy, through his domination by the Demon Cats, through his inauguration, up until this very day, the fifth column media had asked Obama nothing but softball questions. They spent years fawning over the imposter, giving him a pass on the questions that matter the most. But today, like sharks, they attacked him. They asked Obama if he had reacted too slowly to the oil spill. They asked Obama if he had reacted too slowly to the oil spill over and over again. They asked him how he could say everything possible is being done when he refused the help of foreign oil companies to clean up the spill. You heard that one, didn't you? They asked Obama if the oil spill was his Katrina, my line, by the way. They asked him why it's taking so long to stop. They asked him if it was fair to blame the Bush administration and if he, Obama, didn't really deserve the blame. It was astonishing. And they didn't stop at the oil spill. Helen Thomas, who seemed like she had been asleep for the last 200 years, woke up from a casket and asked them, when are you going to get out of Afghanistan? And why are we continuing to kill and die there? And don't give me any BS. And Major Garrett of Fox News asked Obama if he offered Joe Sestak a job in exchange for dropping out of the Pennsylvania Senate race. It was something to watch. It was something to behold. We're talking about today's news on the Savage Nation from Obama, from the Gulf to the Gettys. He rides in oily tracks. And for once, the press seemed to be doing their job. For once, they were no longer the fifth column, but the fourth estate. Their job is to hold leaders accountable for their misdeeds and inform the public about them. For once, the press were watchdogs instead of lapdogs. Why this sudden turnaround? I believe they're finally hearing Michael Savage tell them enough times for the last 6 months that the fourth estate has become a fifth column in this country. It doesn't matter whether they mention me. I know they're hearing me. I just know it. After all, I read their columns. I watch their shows. They know I'm the brightest man in the media. They know that. They don't have to acknowledge it. I don't need their acknowledgement. I don't need their acknowledgement. So they know that their credibility was on the line. They must have heard me call them out over and over again. When I hear them asking softball questions of Obama or taking the side of terrorists, did they realize that this time if they didn't stand up and do their jobs, that even the most distracted American sports-loving dunce would see that they were lackeys and traitors? Whatever the reason, the reporters asked the questions and Obama gave them nothing but evasion and excuses, like a slippery child in high school who gets called out by six teachers at once. Obama said the government didn't have the right technology. Obama blamed BP. Obama repeated the old line that his administration had gone into action on day one. But by the end of the press conference, It looked more like ground zero than day one. Obama looked like a child in school who's been chastened by the principal for cheating. His eyes were downcast. His expression was glum. It seemed as if he didn't know how to react to a press corps that asked real questions. He looked as though he might actually have resigned. I thought he was getting ready to throw in the towel and resign. But then someone said to me, there's no reason for that because only a person with honor would resign after a scandal like this. But there's another question that needs to be asked here. Why didn't Obama approve building the berms that the governor of Louisiana had been begging for? Berms that would have protected the sensitive shoreline from the oil. Obama claimed that they needed to look into the environmental impact of the berms, but that's total crap. Look at the environmental impact of the oil. Could it be the reason he didn't permit the building of the berms by Louisiana? The reason that the entire response was so slow is because this, the most corrupt administration in American history, was simply trying to design who was going to get the spoils, who was going to get the contract, who was going to get the kickbacks, which company was going to get the graft. Was Obama busy trying to arrange contracts with his cronies to clean up the spill while birds were getting covered with oil? Was Obama trying to figure out whose palm to grease? Because from the Gulf to the Gettys, it seems to me Obama rides on oily tracks. But today at his press conference, Obama's oily tracks skidded to a halt. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of this monologue. Okay, let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Now, I want to do a footnote here. Although Obama said he's stopping all oil drilling in the Gulf for now, I want to remind you that the following nations are drilling in the Gulf and they haven't been stopped. England, Russia, Cuba, China, Spain, Norway, India, Malaysia, Venezuela, Vietnam, and Brazil. These are foreign rigs drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. The only people who lost today were the American people. England, Russia, Cuba, China, Spain, Norway, India, Malaysia, Venezuela, Vietnam, and Brazil are still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. They were not stopped by Obama. He doesn't have jurisdiction over them. And Rahm Emanuel is at a bar mitzvah in Israel, and apparently even he can still use a BlackBerry to tell Obama how to never let a crisis pass without capitalizing on it, because he now gets to take over the oil drilling industry. Get it? That's the story. And so the beat goes on. The beat goes on the stage, and you can't hide from this one. So he came from an adoring, loving crowd with Barbara Boxer and her friends over there in San Francisco, the Getty House, where they served scallops for $17,000 a plate. And all of a sudden, there he was facing the world. No more happy applause, no more adulation, no more worship, no more bootlicking. And he couldn't take the heat, so he got out of the kitchen.
You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown, pretending that you're still around.
All right, I'll be right back. We've been talking about Obama and his reaction to the oil spill, the ecological disaster of all times. Joining us now with his views on the Obama administration's reaction to this crisis is Nick Loris from the Heritage Foundation.
Hey, Michael. Glad to be back. Well, here we are a little over a month into the Gulf of Mexico oil spill, and we've got some good news, some bad news, and some more bad news. The good news is that the top kill approach of injecting mud into the leak seems to be working, which is good news. If we can finally plug this leak, we can focus on containing the rest of the spill and focus on environmental cleanup. Now, we certainly don't want to count our chickens before they hatch, but at the same time, this looks like good news, and it looks like BP has finally done something that's been able to stop the leak. The bad news is that more oil was spilling out than initially reported, and the other bad news is that the President Obama has canceled a number of leases off the coast of American waters and has made a resounding push for clean energy legislation, which is the wrong direction for our economy to go in. It's understandable for the American public to want answers right now from the Obama administration, from Congress, and from BP. And there still are many more questions than there are currently available answers. President Obama answered a few in his speech today. A lot of it had to do with canceling these leases and delaying more offshore oil production. Similar to Rahm Emanuel's "you don't ever want a crisis to go to waste" statement, President Obama urged both Democrats and Republicans to move quickly on passing clean energy legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the right solution to America's energy future. He did acknowledge that domestic oil should remain part of America's energy portfolio, but at the same time, he strongly pushed for the move to clean energy legislation by passing a cap and trade bill, by subsidizing or making investments into wind and solar projections and investments for biofuels and other renewable fuels to move us away from oil and in the transportation sector. But the reality is cap and trade is bad for the American economy.
Why is that?
The purpose of this bill is to drive up energy prices high enough to reduce Americans' consumption. And in effect, consumers will be paying more to use less energy, and consequently, their incomes and savings will fall. These higher energy costs will spread throughout the economy as producers everywhere will have to make cost-cutting measures and reducing unemployment. And as we see, we'll have a contracted economy for it. And at a time when regulating greenhouse gas emissions is on the bottom of America's priority list, it doesn't make sense when at the top of their list is economic growth to be regulating at the expense of regulating for greenhouse gases at the expense of the American economy. President Obama did announce that we need to better analyze whether technology on deep water offshore drilling is the right way to go. And that's a legitimate policy, figuring out why the blowout preventer and other fail-safe mechanisms did not come into play should be a priority for this administration. My colleague, heritage analyst Ben Lieberman, said, as the technology advanced to allow for exploration and drilling at great depths, in the case with the Deepwater Horizon, it was 5,000 feet underneath the water and 18,000 feet of seafloor. The challenge of dealing with these spills under these conditions may have lagged. So we need to figure out, was it a result of human error, or did the depths of the water play a role, or was it the lack of available technology? How much of it really was complacency, both of the regulators and of the oil companies, and was it their relationship together? I don't think it's necessarily the time for finger-pointing, as President Obama did, blaming the Bush administration's cozy relationship with the oil industry, but really addressing this problem forward-looking, understanding what went wrong and what we can do to address these problems going forward.
Well, what are the chances of that happening?
Not a lot. He did take some responsibility for this oil spill, but at the same time, he more than once in his speech today, he blamed the Bush administration unnecessarily. This is a problem that we're facing in real time. And, we've seen it in the past with President Obama that he's willing to put President Bush under the bus for problems that aren't necessarily President Bush's fault. And, we may need different regulations, but it shouldn't be regulations that are implemented to make drilling for oil prohibitively expensive.
What can we expect to see in the next few years?
That's the scary part. This is a big overreach on his part, and it could only get worse. Although he did acknowledge that oil production should be a part of America's energy future, the fact that he canceled these leases already, I think, was really to send a message to the American public that he wants to move away from offshore drilling. And that would be a huge concern both for gasoline prices and the American economy. You're talking about tens of thousands of jobs that we would lose. In the Gulf Shore alone, we get 30% of our oil from that region. Any canceled leases off the coast of the Atlantic waters in Virginia, as well as Alaska, where there's plenty of oil that we could recover and produce. And if we don't get it from these areas, we're going to have to get it from tankers from other countries. And that that produces a risk as well. You know, these tankers are more prone to oil spill. Not that it's a very high probability, but these tankers are prone to oil spills. And the probability is much higher than something like this happening again off America's coasts. You know, Congress is also considering, instead of cap and trade, if the prospects for that aren't really high for passing, they have less ambitious goals via a renewable electricity standard, which mandates that a certain percentage of our electricity come from wind and solar and other government-picked sources that Obama favors. But we see this as a huge problem for American energy consumers, and it will do much of the same thing that cap and trade would. It'll destroy jobs and reduce our economic growth by measures of trillions of dollars and millions of jobs. After all, if electricity created by wind and solar and other renewables were cost competitive, consumers would use more of it already without a federal law mandating it in place.
Nick Loris, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show again.
I'm Michael Savage. Be here.
Savage.
Let's not forget about Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Elena Kagan, and how she has no qualifications for this job. She's about as qualified as Ken Salazar is to clean up the oil spill. Joining us now is the Deputy Director of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation, Robert Ault, with his view on this nonentity, Elena Kagan.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on. I think Kagan was not a surprising nominee, obviously. She was the expected nominee, but she was surprising in that she really breaks the mold of recent nominees that we've seen. Obviously, the complete lack of judicial experience, but the fact that she really has very little other experience that the senators will be able to look to in a substantial way to determine how it is she'll act as a judge. The fact that she's barely litigated prior to becoming Solicitor General. In fact, she hadn't litigated a single case before taking that prestigious post, something that's really rather shocking. And the fact that she has really such a scant record, even in the academy. She held very prestigious positions, obviously. The dean of Harvard, obviously more of an administrative than a academic post, but she was also a professor at Harvard, as well as at Chicago, and yet she published half a dozen articles. One of the other prominent Harvard professors in this past century who got elevated to the court without having served on the bench was Felix Frankfurter. By comparison, he had published about 45 articles in the Harvard Law Review alone. So, I mean, this is sort of what we had become accustomed to, were folks who actually had stated views on issues of constitutional interpretation and the sort of legal concerns. And so there's a in terms of what there is to think about Kagan, in many ways, there are more questions than answers.
What about the clean slate the media keeps pushing us about?
Well, again, at this point, I think she's not a clean slate. She clearly has her biases. She clearly has... We do have indications that she approaches the world from both a very liberal political and a very liberal legal view, even from the limited record that we have. So to call her a blank slate, what's blank is in many ways what we know about her. We know she's liberal. We just don't know how liberal, and we don't know exactly how it is that she'll approach the law because we've never seen how she's approached a case from the perspective of a judge, and very little even from the perspective of an advocate. And so how disturbing is it? Well, that's yet to be seen. But she's made statements in her career that are very troubling, whether it was when she was a clerk for Justice Marshall and she suggested that the court not hear a case involving the very claim that the court ended up deciding in Heller that the complete gun ban in D.C. was unconstitutional and deprived people of their Second Amendment rights. When someone raised that claim, she said, "I'm just not sympathetic to that." And that shows a disdain not merely for Second Amendment rights, but it shows something about how it is she approaches the law. It shows that she believes that that somehow her opinion as a law clerk and her sympathies should have some bearing as to how it is that the law is decided, rather than taking a look at the Constitution and seeing what it actually says, that there's actually a right to bear arms in there. So we've got a few statements like that. She referred in a piece, a little book review that she wrote, or actually this was a little piece in homage of Justice Marshall, I should say. She referred to his approach to the law as being one that really saw the court almost exclusively as a channel for taking care of the despised and disadvantaged. And she referred to that vision as a thing of glory, even though it had been attacked as activist. So I think we really need to find out, is that how she is going to approach judicial questions should she be put on the Supreme Court? Is she going to take a sort of an activist approach that says, I'm more interested in the individual parties before me than I am with what the law requires? Because that's a very different vision of what a judge should do than the oath that they take to dispense equal justice without regard to parties.
Well, how do you think this is actually going to turn out?
Well, I think, look, confirmation battles are always math tests. And you begin with the simple math that the president's party has a majority in the Senate, and that and a substantial one. And that alone is probably the most important factor as to how she gets through. That said, we've seen instances in the past, generally speaking, it tended to be when it was a Republican nominee and Republicans in the Senate in control, where the president's own party might raise questions, and that can jeopardize a nomination. We haven't seen too much of that yet, but we do have – there have been concerns already by some liberal law professors, bloggers, and the like about some of her positions. They're not sure how devoted she is to the pro-abortion causes. They're concerned about whether or not she might be too much of a rubber stamp for executive authority. In particular, they point to an article she wrote on executive power, which they think is too deferential to the president's authority during wartime. And obviously, many of them have great concerns about that. So if those concerns began to get a foothold, and you could see it with someone like a Senator Feingold, who in particular, while he tends to be very deferential to the president on nominations, nonetheless tends to be very critical of assertions of presidential authority and national security, you could see this causing some problems for the nomination. But quite frankly, that's yet to be seen, and that I think will be materializing, particularly as some of the documents from the Clinton White House year start to come out.
What kind of timeline are we looking at?
Well, this is a process on grease skids at this point. Senator Leahy has scheduled the committee hearings to begin on the 28th of June. And he's doing so in order to get the committee hearings, which is where they'll question her and any other witnesses. That should all be done before the July 4th recess, following which they'll come back. And by the end of that month, before the August recess, they're seeking to have both the committee vote, the referral to the floor, and the floor vote. So we're looking probably no later than the first week of August. I don't know if they've scheduled what date they're leaving town yet to have a final vote on her nomination. So all pretty quick, particularly when you consider, again, we've got this very thin record. The Clinton Library, she served time in the Clinton White House, in the White House Counsel's office, has 160,000 pages of documents which they've identified and are supposed to be producing. So the job of the Hill staffers is a pretty heavy climb to get through that many documents in time for hearings at the end of next month.
Hmm.
An area of major concern with regard to Kagan, and something that I think would certainly be of interest, is her views on the First Amendment, which I think are troubling for folks on both the right and the left. In the Citizens United case, she made the argument, the government, before she became Solicitor General, had made the argument that if there was any sort of corporate, and keep in mind corporate is essentially, you know, you can have nonprofits that are put together to push it, to advocate on behalf of issues of public concern. If there's any corporate funds, you could restrict the publication of a book if it had any kind of an electioneering message in it. The idea of government banning books is something that it actually sent a shockwave through the court. And so when they re-argued it, she didn't make that argument, but she suggested that government could clearly ban pamphlets. And so you could see, for instance, you know, Thomas Paine's Common Sense, the Federalist Papers, you know, much of the early pamphleteering in this country, the idea that government could ban that is very troubling. And the fact that she saw no First Amendment problem with that is even more troubling. But this actually conforms. Sometimes as Solicitor General, as an attorney, you make arguments on behalf of your client that you don't necessarily agree with. But it seems that she probably does agree with these pretty extreme statements.
Why do you say that?
A number of her writings have suggested that a more heavy-handed approach with regard to governmental regulation of speech, the idea that government can and should perhaps take a broader role in regulating speech that it deems to be hate speech, or where it has an interest somehow in redistributing speech. So these ideas, once again, pretty disturbing, both in the campaign finance context, but also just more generally. And so I think during the hearings, you're going to hear a lot of questions about what it is that she thinks the First Amendment protects and why it is that she thinks that there should be any interest in the government redistributing speech.
Robert Ault, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Again, thanks for having me, and I look forward to chatting with you in the future.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, this is a big mess. Part of the purpose of this press conference is to explain to the folks down in the Gulf that ultimately it is our folks down there who are responsible. If they're not satisfied with something that's happening, then they need to let us know, and we will immediately question BP and ask them, why isn't XYZ happening?
And now I'd like to turn your attention to the little website that could, over 1.7 million unique visitors every month, over 4 million page views a month. And the reason is that there's news fatigue amongst the American people. I know most of you can't take it anymore. You have news fatigue, you have information fatigue. And basically what I try to do for you is give you a simple caption and a simple picture which you scan. So here's Obama with some ball players with a baseball jersey, and the headline is Obama skips Arlington Memorial Cemetery but meets with ball players instead. You know, as they say, one picture is worth a thousand lies. Was Savage first to call the Gulf spill Obama's Katrina? I believe so. It doesn't matter whether I was the first, because I won't be the last. The Department of Homeland Security says terror attempts at the U.S. at an all-time high. Really? And yet they're looking at anti-abortionists and militia members. Huh? Obama said he's going to put troops on the border, that is National Guard troops, but with no guns, sort of like the Navy before the coal went down. or before the coal almost went down. No bullets and no guns. So the National Guard will, what, be giving out tacos on the Mexican border? The National Guard will give out, will be manning the hydration stations for the illegal aliens? Head of offshore drilling agency fired, sources say. Corrupt one. There was another firing today. But this is even worse. The lunatic counterterrorism advisor, one of the most lunatic counterterror advisors in history. I don't know where they got this guy from. I have no idea. He defends the word jihad as a legitimate tenet of Islam. I swear to God. During a speech at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, John Brennan described violent Islamic extremists as victims of political, economic, and social forces. But he said that those plotting attacks in the United States should not be described in religious terms. If he isn't working for the enemy, he should be. He really ought to be getting a check every month from Jihad Inc. Let me tell you, this has gone far enough. Hey, look at all the uncertainty and instability that Obama's creating. It's no wonder that the economy is shaky. Gold prices have been going through the roof, and that's why you should contact my great advertisers at Swiss America. Obama might be laying the economy low, but gold is defying that trend. Go to the best name in gold, SwissAmerica.com. Well, you have to listen to this. Here is what Obama said at his press conference on the oil spill.
And when I woke up this morning, and I'm shaving, and Malia knocks on my bathroom door, and she peeks in her head, and she says, did you plug the hole yet, Daddy? I grew up in Hawaii, where the ocean is sacred. And in case anybody wonders, in any of your reporting, in case you're wondering who's responsible, I take responsibility. It is my job to make sure that everything is done to shut this down.
And here was a great question, shockingly, by Chip Reed of CBS News.
First of all, Elizabeth Birnbaum resigned today. Did she resign? Was she fired? Was she forced out? And if so, why? And should other heads roll as we go on here? Secondly, with regard to the Minerals Management Service, Secretary Salazar yesterday basically blamed the Bush administration for the cozy relationship there. And you seemed to suggest that when you spoke in the Rose Garden a few weeks ago, when you said for too long, a decade or more, most of those years, of course, the Bush administration, there's been a cozy relationship between the oil companies and the federal agency that permits them to drill. But you knew as soon as you came in, and Secretary Salazar did, about this cozy relationship. But you continued to give permits, some of them under questionable circumstances. Is it fair to blame the Bush administration? Don't you deserve some of that?
And the slippery response.
Well, let me just make the point that I made earlier, which is Salazar came in and started cleaning house, but the culture had not fully changed in MMS. And I take responsibility for that. There wasn't sufficient urgency in terms of the pace of how those changes needed to take place. There's no evidence that some of the corrupt practices that had taken place earlier took place under the current administration's watch. With respect to Ms. Birnbaum, I found out about her resignation today. Ken Salazar has been in testimony throughout the day, so I don't know the circumstances in which this occurred.
And here was Helen Thomas called upon for a softball question, who threw a curveball, actually asking a good question for once.
President, when are you going to get out of Afghanistan? Why are you continuing to kill and die there? What is the real excuse? And don't give us this Bushism. If we don't go there, they'll all come here.
I guess Obama wasn't expecting that curveball from Helen. After all, she hasn't been seen alive in over two centuries. Here was his pathetic response.
Al-Qaeda has affiliates that not only provide them safe harbor, but increasingly are willing to conduct their own terrorist operations, initially in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, but increasingly directed against Western targets and targets of our allies as well. So it is absolutely critical that we dismantle that network of extremists that are willing to attack us. And they are currently, they absolutely are a threat to us. They're a significant threat to us. I wouldn't be deploying young men and women into harm's way if I didn't think that they were an absolute threat to us.
There were many other stories. Obama nominee for the Second Circuit Court of Appeals says that sexual sadists deserve empathy. It should be a legitimate legal mitigating factor. Hey, it's getting crazier by the second, I swear to you. No wonder you have news fatigue. People don't know which way to turn.
I read the news today, oh boy.
Two Israelis picketing Rahm Emanuel for being who he is. Arrested immediately in Israel for heckling Rahm Emanuel. You think it's bad here? It's worse there. Slimy doings weren't all at the oil well. And again, please don't miss Healing Children Naturally, only available on michaelsavage.com. A to Z natural approaches for natural complaints, written by a parent, yours truly, and the author of 17 books on the subjects of health and nutrition by Dr. Michael Savage. Healing Children Naturally. You must take a look at this book. All on michaelsavage.com. You are listening to The Savage Nation, the one and only Savage Nation, unique unto itself in the United States of the Americas. Savage.